Train Talk Radio, episode number 3. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our third episode of Train Talk Radio. Austin McAdams is not here right now. He is in Arizona, correct?
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing. Probably something to do with trains.
Soul searching.
I have no idea where he is. But filling in, of course, is Travis Clark.
Hello.
Which was here as a guest on a very poorly mic'd... he was actually just using a iPhone mic. Well, I better turn this music off. But anyway, today we wanted to go over a few different topics. Travis has something to say, don't you?
Yeah, so the first is actually just something that happened to me that's pretty interesting. The other day, I was actually at the pool or something like that, and this guy showed up and he wanted to talk to me about what he's done with his life, which was kind of interesting. And at some point he started talking about a railroad he worked for, and it was interesting just how little people know about the railroads.
Yeah.
Like, he was talking about how he worked for them for a few months, and he was just spouting on and on about what he was doing, and it was just like he just drove a truck for them or something. But in the end, he said, and then in the end, it was some short line. He's like, and in the end, it ended up being merged into Penn Central, which is still around today.
Yeah.
It's a highly successful railroad. I'm like,
Penn Central.
Really?
Is it still around today?
It was like failed instantly. 3 years, it was bankrupt and it became.
Oh, I thought you meant the Penn Central was still around.
Yeah, no, but he was saying Penn Central was still around. And I'm
Oh, I get where you're coming from. How little he's aware of the history of his own employer.
Yeah, and I'm like Penn Central. That's not around. He's like, what do you know? You're a kid. And
yeah, that was Pennsylvania Railroad
and New York Central.
And New York Central, and then later, the Conrail thing came about.
Yeah,
which was the government run.
Yeah, and then eventually they became NS once Conrail was done. And then in a little bit later, he was talking to me. Then he joined the Air Force, and he was stationed at Edwards Air Force Base, which is right next to Mojave.
Yeah, which is right where the layout where we are at, the terminus, the eastern terminus.
Yeah, the Mojave, eastern one.
The southern terminus for those of us who are modern, because they changed the direction. It's north-south, not east-west. But either way, that is very near where we are modeling on this layout.
And what was interesting is he was stationed there, and he was complaining about how there would be so much revenue coming to California if they could just put a line through the Tehachapi Mountains. And he doesn't understand why there isn't a railroad line through there. And I'm like, I'm like, there is. And he's like, no, there isn't. I'm like, what? And then he was talking.
Yeah, it's only the busiest single track main line. What in the world? In the world.
And
yeah,
they're trying to double track it. And then he was talking. He's like, I love Old Town Tehachapi so much. I spend 3 weeks a year up there.
The train runs right through
Old Town.
Everyone in the town is aware of the railroad. The town is there because of the railroad.
The town symbol is a Southern Pacific F7. And he's like, I just don't get why they can't do it. It's just...
Was he being sarcastic? Was this a joke?
He was being totally serious. He was just nonstop, I don't get why they can't. And I'm finally like, there is a train line through there. And he was just amazed. He was just beyond amazed.
And he works not that far from the Tehachapi.
And so...
That's pretty interesting. Speaking on the topic of how little people are aware of railroads these days, it just angers me when people don't realize that they rely really heavily on railroads their everyday needs. They see, you know, the stuff being shipped by, you know, the airplanes these days and trucks and stuff like that, but they don't see railroads as the you know, part of their lives. So they assume that they are obsolete, which we know they are not.
Yeah.
The railroads are what built America, and they without them, would you like to see 10,000 trucks on the freeway?
Yeah, I mean, an intermodal, just one car gets rid of two trucks, and think about how long these double stacks are. That's all those trucks off the
road. And you just need two crew members.
Right? Yeah, only two people.
Yeah, you don't need a driver for each. Imagine the amount of... I mean, it would create jobs.
Yeah, but
we're not... trying to, you know, We are trying to create jobs in the United States.
The highway system would be so jam-packed. It would be a mess.
I mean, as you said, it would take... for each car, it would take... assuming they're double stacks, it would take two truck drivers for each car.
Yeah. So...
Yeah. So that's why I think people, the general public, should take into consideration that railroads are they're a really important part of the economy. They're a really important part of, I mean, not so much our transportation anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe for the interurban style transit.
Sort of commuter railroads.
I mean, people don't super heavily, I mean, of course they rely on them. There are a lot of people that rely on railroad or Amtrak trains to get from place to place, but they're not the primary mode of transportation anymore.
Yeah, but
so it all goes out of people's minds when they
when you don't have passenger trains. That's really what people think of, is old passenger trains with a steam engine pushing it along.
And they always assume, I'm sure many of you who are rail fans listening to this, or modelers or employees of the railroad, you are aware that, you know, people will probably do this when you talk to them about trains. They don't realize the variety. They think a train is a train, smoke comes out of it, it burns coal.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
How, you know, there's people that they're into race cars, they're into dirt bikes, they know all this stuff. They know, you know, every kind of jet airplane that's coming out.
Yeah.
But how little, especially our youth, takes into consideration of railroads. I think it's the thing that you have to be exposed to you know, really to actually bring about into your, at least, hobby, like modeling trains.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be exposed to it. Well, anyway, should we move on to our next topic?
Yeah, and continuing, one way to expose anybody you know who isn't really into trains, we have coming up December Nights, which is the 5th and 6th.
Oh, you're right. Here, for any of you who's, this is the first episode you've ever watched, we are here at the La Mesa Model Railroad Club in Balboa Park, which is in the San Diego Model Railroad Museum, and it's the largest model railroad museum in the United States.
In the United States, it is, yeah.
And December Nights, which is December 5th and 6th, 2014, that's a Friday and a Saturday night. So, and explain to us what that is.
From 5 to 9, you could get into any museum in the park for free, and that's going on our subject, a great way to expose anybody who doesn't know anything about trains to the world of trains, because we're going to have, for free, you could get in and see all the different rail lines of California that used to be and still are around, and all the different eras running just
all
over
this. And it's all in miniature. You don't have to go drive far from your home if you live here in San Diego. So, why don't you come and do that? And this is the La Mesa Model Railroad Club, so we are the exhibit that models Tehachapi in 1953 right now.
Yeah.
But there will be other eras of trains running on the layout, no doubt.
Yep.
But the layout as you see it is in the 1950s. As those of you on the video feed will see this short freight backing unprotected
across Kern Junction.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know where the engineer is. Oh, he's up there. Anyway.
So, just a quick heritage notice. As you know, one of my jobs on this radio show is to talk about heritage stuff. Just a quick heritage notice. We've got a few things happening. The Western Pacific Heritage Unit, for any of you who don't know, burned out a couple months ago.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah, and so it was getting repainted, and it took them a long time because they needed to order all new decals.
Right.
And it's been out for about a week. I forgot to talk about this last week. It's finally out and on the move, freshly repainted.
So what exactly burned out on it? It was
I think that motor or the engine caught fire.
Was it like the turbocharger?
Yeah, the turbocharger. Mm-hmm. And so it just had a giant burn streak down the side. And so they finally repainted it, and it's brand new looking.
Have you seen, there's this one video, it's like from the 80s, I want to say. It's like a UP train where you actually see I think it's the turbocharger burn out as it's moving.
Oh,
there's
There's
a fireball. I've seen that one.
I've seen that. Have you seen the one with the NS-9? It's a video on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. I think I have seen it.
I think it's called Norfolk Southern Train Catches on Fire. It's a really interesting video. You can see what happens after a engine blows. Yeah. There's just flames shooting out of the
stack.
Well,
they have to be really careful because they got a huge tank of diesel fuel.
Yeah.
You know, and if that goes up, then basically lost the whole thing.
Yeah.
And anyone who's around it probably would get seriously injured or killed even.
Yeah.
So that's a serious issue when a locomotive catches fire, let alone a train car or especially a passenger car. That would be serious issue. But anyway, that's interesting that that locomotive, the Heritage locomotive,
yeah,
that would happen to it.
Yeah, it's back out there, fully repainted. So I forgot where it's going right now. It was going to North Platte a couple days ago, mm-hmm. and now it's, I think it's already there, and it's going to go elsewhere, but it's freshly repainted. So if you ever get wind of it coming your way, go out, take a look. You'll see what it looked like back in 2006.
Yeah, it looks brand new.
Yeah.
So what? How many locomotives are in the Heritage fleet?
They've got 6 Heritage units, and NS has like 21.
Okay, so are those going to get repainted and re-decaled, or have they been?
They don't need to be. I think for UP, they're just doing it as needed. Basis.
So like there are some of the locomotives that seriously need to be repainted.
Yeah, but it's once something big happens. Also on the Heritage alert, CSX 699, which is their diversity and motion unit, is in UP Bakersfield Yard right now.
Really?
Yeah, it's AC 6000 with a giant sticker on the side that just says diversity and motion, but it's pretty interesting.
AC 6000 unit?
Yeah.
Aren't they, what railroad's actually doing the rebuild on those?
Well,
is it
UP?
UP's doing a Gevo rebuild? Where they're putting a Gevo prime mover in them?
They've got the old AC 44.
Because I read it was one of the railroads with the AC 6000s was doing an engine rebuild.
I know that UP's put,
or not an engine rebuild, but a prime mover replace.
I know UP has some of the AC 44 movers in there, the old FDL 16s. I don't know.
Well, because the original they were supposed to be convertible locomotives, which means that when the time came, they could be replaced with a 6,000 horsepower
engine
prime mover. But until that time came, they would put the regular 4,400 horsepower unit in them when they left the factory from GE, and they could bring them back in and put the 6,000. But that never happened. Did it?
Well, UP got a few of the demonstrator ones that actually had 6,000 horsepower, and they hated them. It's just too much horsepower to handle. It would rattle, and it was just unreliable. So they just kept it as 4,400 horsepower.
That's interesting how it's throughout the years they've been trying to achieve that high horsepower rating as a standard for most road locomotives, and yet here we are still in 2014, and we have these Gevo units that are only 4,400 horsepower.
That's sort of like the sweet spot. It's not it's not too much to damage the engine, but it's not too little to need too much power on there.
So it's basically a sweet spot where it's going to stay, because you can have these fuel-efficient locomotives and you can just MU them together and you'll get a solid, solid block of power there.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we wanted to move on to our main topic of the show today, which I was going to say, since Travis is a self-proclaimed weathering expert, I'm just kidding. He's pretty good at weathering. We wanted to talk about the different styles, techniques, and reasons for weathering model, train, rolling stock, and locomotives. So the main reason, I'd say, is a lot of people don't do it because they think that shiny and new is a good thing, and it's what's appealing to them.
Yeah.
And that's where the line goes between collectors and people
modelers
who just want to run trains for the fun of it, and hardcore modelers, like the people here at this layout who want to make it look like it would on a particular day of a particular year. And I think it's an important thing to do, but there are times when stuff can be overweathered. I know you'll read a lot of books where it says that, there's no rules to it, just have at it. But there are some
basic guidelines
that you probably want to follow to get a good result.
And so, continuing on that, it's really just depends on what you're using. Like, think of your era and then look at the piece of rolling stock you want to weather. Like, if, for example, I'm just going to do modern because I know modern stuff. If you have a modern TTX boxcar and high cube with the forward thinking logo, those I mean, other than some graffiti, are nice and clean looking. So just either leave it clean and just gel coat it or put a piece of graffiti in. That's good enough.
And it also depends on, say, the color of the car.
Oh, yeah, that's a big issue.
It also it depends on what you want to use on that car, whether it be a chalk or a wash, perhaps, or maybe just dry brushing.
Yeah.
Maybe airbrushing, you know, dusting it. Usually most high quality weathering jobs are done starting with maybe an airbrush dusting, especially near the wheels and trucks, because that's where the dirt is kicked up on out in the desert or anywhere where trains run at speed. But I think it's important. This is the mistake I made, is the horizontal versus vertical.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, whether you're doing airbrushing or you're doing with a brush or chalks or whatever, everything should run vertical, because that's the way the gravity goes. That's the way that rainwater runs on rolling stock. It makes a huge difference if you go horizontal and vertical. There's some examples right here in the Bakersfield yard we are looking at. For those of you who are listening on the audio portion, you can't see it, but we have some cars here. I believe that's an airbrush right there, like this one on the end here.
Right there.
It's a Pacific Fruit Express.
Yeah, that one is.
And it's just vertical strokes ever so often on the car, which indicate a dusting, maybe where the water or rainwater would pour down from the roof, and it takes all the gunk that's on the roof with it, and that is on the side of the car.
Yeah, and then you got on the bottom, you have some brown from dirt kick-up from muddy day.
It also has to do with the color, because on these are arch bar trucks with the old style journal boxes, and that's where there'd be a lot of oil. You know, grease that's coming out of those journals down onto the face of the wheel, down around the truck. So it would generally be a greenish, blackish, you know, grayish kind of color that's on these trucks. And these trucks were originally black.
Yeah.
Whereas on modern stuff, usually you want your wheels to be a rusty color. Yeah. Maybe if they're a bit an older car, say, maybe just a little more of the dark brown.
Yeah.
But usually there's not too much grease that gets on the wheels on the modern stuff, because they have the new Timken roller bearings, which are pretty well sealed.
Yeah, those are.
So that's my thoughts on the old trucks versus the modern trucks and weathering. But you can see it has an airbrush dusting on it, and it's kind of a grayish, brownish, greenish. It's kind of hard to describe.
It's like a grimy gray.
Yeah. And then there's other points, like on this car right here.
Yeah, see that
where one. It's very heavily weathered. That looks like it's done with a, would you say it's a chalk or an airbrush?
I'd say they hit it with an airbrush and then hit it with some chalks right after that.
Where it's a real dark coat on it, where, you know, there's a lot of soot and stuff, you know, that's in the tunnel when these steam locomotives were, you know, taking these reefer blocks up the pass. And that would get all over these cars, and these are wood cars. And it's where they had to, they could not make out the road number originally on this car, and that's something that they need to make out on these cars so they know where to deliver them to, you know, to be loaded or unloaded. So it looks like they painted a patch over that where it looks brand new and put the road number on the car.
Yeah.
And there's also another point on the car where, I don't know, maybe they had to replace a few of the boards on the car.
That's what that would represent, yeah.
And it looks brand new and orange. So there's you know, these exceptions depending on whether you're following a prototype of the car and what it had, or you just want to do prototype practice. There's instances where weathering can be achieved with, you know, making something look a lot newer than the rest of the car.
Yeah.
That's a part of weathering. It's not just making it look old.
Yeah. And then it also, moving on, I'm going to talk about locomotives now. That's a big issue for me, because a lot of people either want to do it way too light or way too heavy.
Yeah.
There's sort of, all these books you read will tell you there's no such thing as too heavy, because these are all grimy, running all day, all night. So you should just go at it. But I don't really think that's true. Looking at them, I mean, unless they're really being worked, like some of the older UP locomotives, they look all right. Like, just
Yeah.
What I do is I just hit the trucks with a general kind of coat of grime in the fuel tank, and then you just hit the locomotive's top with a sort of blackish color because
those locomotives. Because that's where the soot's coming up.
Yeah.
And do you like greatly... I know this is probably easier on the locomotives that don't have a black
roof.
Yeah. Right. It's easier to achieve the look of the exhaust stack and all the soot that's around it on a non-black roofed locomotive.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, it is.
So how do you go about doing that? Is that just do you usually use a paint?
I like using powders because they're more controllable, and if you screw up, you can wash it off relatively easily.
And you have to seal powders, right?
You do have to seal powders.
What do you use, just a dull coat?
Yeah, I use a dull coat varnish. But the main issue with using powders is you have to clean the locomotive totally first, otherwise you're gonna have finger oils
and stuff. It's kind of interesting. What do you use to clean the locomotive? Because I've heard on some of the YouTube they like to use like Windex and stuff.
I just use standard rubbing alcohol and do it lightly. If you do it too hard, you're gonna make the paint
start taking the paint off. Yeah, that's strong stuff.
Yeah, but just lightly hit it and it works fine. And you pretty much just one hit will kill all those fingerprints. Like wipe them right up.
Mm-hmm.
With Windex, I found sometimes you actually have to scrub at the fingerprints. Yeah. So
that's why. Do you handle locomotives with plastic gloves?
Yeah, I do. And I mainly handle them with gloves. Sometimes I don't if I'm just doing a little bit to them. Like if I'm wanting to go for a newer look and I'm just really dull coating and putting a little bit of powders on, there's no real reason for me.
Unless you're doing
handle
the whole locomotive, right?
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about some of the over-weathering that we see on... Not necessarily here as much, but on other people's layouts. We've seen locomotives where they've really gone to town, and maybe this locomotive isn't that old, and especially on a newer locomotive, they do over-weathering on. Now, there's some cases where especially on the photographic rosters and stuff, you can see throughout the years what a locomotive, particularly the modern ones, what they look like. And there's some cases where they were really weathered at one point, maybe that month. You know, they were on a section of the railroad where there was a lot of rain. They were going through a lot of tunnels. There's soot everywhere. Then maybe the next year they gave them a really good cleaning, and now they're, you know, just moderately weathered again.
Yeah.
So there's points where if you want to model it being so heavily weathered for that particular point in time, I mean, that's not a permanent how it would look for the, you know, for many years after that. They probably would clean it eventually.
Yeah, well, it also just depends. It's not a bad thing to do that to one or two of them.
Yeah,
but
not every single one.
Yeah, if you have an entire train of just totally...
There's some variety.
Yeah. ...ruined locomotives, it's going to not look right. There was one train I saw where it was... Everything was either just a blackish or brownish color, and that you couldn't really tell what the colors of the original cars and engines were, and that doesn't really look right, like compared to a prototype train. You only have a few of those cars, and I have a few cars like that, and I think one engine like that, and that's really the only ones I have because those are the things that really stand out and just pop. And if you have too many of those, then your train just doesn't look right.
Right. I mean, it's kind of. You have to look at it kind of like an art form.
Yeah.
Not totally what you want it. I mean, it's what you want it to look like. But, you know, there's people's tastes will vary.
Yeah.
And if you're following the prototype, you'll find that it varies. You know, there's cars that look really new, and there's cars that look, you know, like they've just been painted black, basically, flat black. But you have to find the... You know, the sweet point where the train looks like, you know, basically a piece of art.
Yes.
It doesn't look glossy. It doesn't look like every car is painted black.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like there's some examples of the trains here in front of us, or the cuts of cars, I should say. I really shouldn't say they're trains. They're cuts of cars in the yard here. And those of you on YouTube can probably see some of those.
Them.
There's some that are really heavily weathered. There's some that almost look like they're brand new. And it's kind of funny because it looks like there's some dust on some of them. And that actually adds to the nostalgia of the 50s.
But and there's another method I like to do. It's sort of if you don't know, just go in the middle. Like there's a cut, even on YouTube, you can't see off on the side of PFE reefers in an ice block. And you can see even the ones that everything has sort of a brownish coat. So that's what I do if I don't really want to, don't know what to do with it. You just hit it with a light brown coat or a dark or a light sort of fade, and it'll look fine. You don't even really need to do anything
now,
else to
it. Now, were most of these cars at one time painted the same shade of orange? Would they have been, would you say?
Yeah, well, all pretty the close. Ones, pretty close. They're all
because now it looks
orange.
Like, it kind of looks like an orange tree when you have some that are not ripe and some that are super ripe.
Yeah.
I mean, it really looks good because you don't have, there's no two cars that are exactly the same. And that's what makes a good train.
Yeah.
Because, see, that's like a piece of art right there.
Yeah.
And it, some looks like some are done with washes, some are done with airbrush.
Yeah, it's a mix.
Yeah.
Now, it's harder to do this with modern sort of reefer trains where they're all white.
Because you have white. Yeah, you got some of these are steel, some of these are wood. I think, no, those are some of those are wood.
Yeah, some of these are wood.
That cut. I think that most those might mostly be steel.
Yeah. But still, white cars are really hard to do because too light, too dark. And
it's it does it's not just, look right.
It doesn't look right. It's harder to clean up, but too light and you won't really be able to tell. You sort of, what you have to do is you have to find like a really light brown and just sort of experiment with it. On the top, rust is like a really tricky thing to do.
Yeah. Now, there's one more thing I just want to do before we close up here because we're going a little bit over, but I just wanted to ask you, how do you go about weathering a black piece of rolling stock or locomotive?
The main thing there, which is in a lot of books, is just lightly hit it with a light gray and it'll sort of fade it away like you see on a lot of older pieces. And then sometimes I might try to hit it with some powders just so you can sort of see. Because on the lettering, if you hit it with powders, the lettering will get covered up a little bit with the color. Right. And that just your eye will pick up on those sort of slight differences and you'll see that it's all just, you'll put it together that it's all just covered. I've got one last thing I didn't get to finish.
And what do you want to say?
On the Heritage, I got one more Heritage notice. 184, which is the Phase 4 Amtrak Heritage unit, is going up and down on the surf liner. It's been doing this for a week or two now. I've seen it a few times. If you live along the surf line, just keep an eye out. You'll definitely see that. It's just going up and down. And then NS-8099, which is the southern unit, is actually going over Tehachapi Pass right now. It's on a BNSF train. It's headed to Barstow. So,
yeah, that's interesting. So we should keep an eye out for that one.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for listening to our third episode, and hopefully we have some more to come. And we want to kind of tap into the experienced people here at the club and probably bring some more wisdom from them into the podcast, which... because they are people who have worked on the railroad. They are people who have done this for many years, and they know what they're doing. So
yeah, they do.
I just want to thank you for listening and subscribe on iTunes and be here on December 5th and 6th, or be here any day, except Monday it's closed. Because that's free, December 5th and 6th, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thank you and goodbye.
See ya.